City and South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
I'm Neil Whiteside.
And I'm Linda Ness.
We went to the Gambia to visit two projects, both of which are making a difference to the lives of the local population. The Bantaba Project, which aims to train the local population with a range of skills, and the Bangtangba Project, which is a preschool nursery. Yes, the names are confusingly similar.
What have these projects got to do with Cambridge? Well, the Bantaba Project is being supported by two Cambridge Rotary Clubs, and the Bangtangba Project is run by Goal for the Gambia, one of whose committee members is Cambridge resident Joanna Bromwich.
Joanna spoke to Linda before we left for the Gambia.
We're quite a small charity set up by one lady, Sandy Sangyang, with a small group of committee members and volunteers. And what we do is we support education and learning and different rural projects and areas over in the Gambia. My husband and I just decided we wanted a bit of winter sun, found a holiday where there was sunshine involved. Obviously the Gambia in October, pretty nice weather. Historically, I really don't like going somewhere and not seeing the real country, so we got in touch with Sandy via TripAdvisor, just at looking into visiting a local school. And it kind of escalated from there. Sandy invited us to go and visit a school with her, and then my friends at work got involved, and before we knew it, we had two suitcases full of educational supplies to take with us, and it went from there, really. It's kind of heartbreaking when you go out there in some ways. So the school we went to see was very basic. There was just, you know, a deep well that was completely uncovered where three-year-olds were hanging over with a cup. The nursery block was so small. They had 70 children packed into this tiny room. Quite often they would pass out or they would be asleep on their desk because it's so hot, obviously. So we just decided, let's raise money. Let's set a fundraising page up. To see if we could raise £800 for a toilet block. It kind of escalated, and before we knew it, we had 3,000. We're not really people that go to the same place over and over again, but once they were built and we saw some pictures, we decided, let's go back, have a look. And that visit then turned into us being invited to join the committee, which turned into us going back every year ever since.
Neil Whiteside and I are going to be going out to the Gambia to look at your project and another project as well. What should we take with us when we're going out there?
I would take school supplies, so pencils and pens, colouring pencils, colouring books. The stuff that children like, I would definitely take out for the school.
I'm kind of assuming these children don't have a lot of toys.
They don't have any toys, really, no.
They don't have anything?
No.
Does someone still get alarm fly takes you to a banjo?
Check now that your table is folded away, your seat back is upright and the armrests are down.
I've got a flight time today of 5 hours 51 minutes, cruising at 33,000 feet.
Officially, the Republic of the Gambia is a country in West Africa that is almost entirely surrounded by Senegal, with the exception of its western coastline along the Atlantic Ocean. It's the smallest country within mainland Africa. The Gambia is situated on both sides of the lower reaches of the Gambia River, which flows through the centre of the Gambia and empties into the Atlantic. It has an area of 4,000 square miles with a population of just under 2 million people. Although 90% of the population are Muslim, Muslim and Christians live happily side by side and often intermarry. Banjul is the Gambian capital and the largest cities are Serekunda and Brikama. The Gambia shares historical roots with many other West African nations in the slave trade. It was the birthplace of Kunta Kinte, made famous in Alex Haley's Roots. The Gambia was colonised first by the Portuguese. Then in 1765, the Gambia was made a part of the British Empire when the government established the province of Senegambia. In 1965, the Gambia gained independence. The Gambia's economy is dominated by farming, fishing and especially tourism. In 2015, 48.6% of the population lived in poverty. In rural areas, poverty is even more widespread, at almost 70%.
Yes, we'd like to wish you a very warm welcome to Banjul in Gambia. Local time here is exactly the same as it is in the UK, so there's no need to adjust your watches. Outside temperature isn't quite what it is in the UK, it's 26 degrees. For the time being, if I can ask you please to remain seated.
From the moment you arrive at the airport, you know you're in Africa. We stood in a long queue to have our passports checked, and then in another to have our luggage scanned before we could leave the arrivals hall. We were met by John Martin from the Rotary Club of Cambridge, together with Rose, who's running the Bantaba project, and Abu, a Gambian who's worked with Rose for decades. All of the cars on the road are old and beaten up, including, if she'll forgive us, Rose's. Once we hit the main highway, it was clear to see why.
There were cars everywhere. Cars suddenly joined the tarmac road from the unmade and dusty roadside, joining the traffic wherever it could, usually right in front of you. Lots of beeping of horns and shouting could be heard. People walked at the side of the road and I wondered how they survived. Cars overtaking where there was no space to overtake. Dust everywhere. It was like taking part in a real-life version of wacky races.
We'd arrived in the early evening and the sun was going down, so it was that dusky half-light which didn't help visibility. Rose, who was driving, chatted in a relaxed manner about life in the Gambia and didn't seem to notice the nervousness of her newly arrived passengers. Nor did she notice that two of her engine warning lights were on and the speedo didn't work.
But we did. We arrived at the Swiss Boutique Hotel and met Rose's sister, Irene, who is a member of the Rotary Club of Sawston. We had soon settled into our rooms and had a leisurely evening dinner with John and Irene.
The following morning, we were picked up by Lamin Boy, who was driving us to visit the Bantaba project.
It's just coming up to 9:10 in the morning. We're up, we're breakfasted, and we're out on our way. We're in our car.
We're trundling along the road at the moment. We have a driver called Lamin.
Very nice to see Gambia.
Yeah, it is. So this is like one of the few main tarmac roads, isn't it, through the town?
Yeah. We are in turntable, they call it. Roundabout, we call it turntable.
Right. Okay.
After turntable, we are going to Tangier. Big Sandy is the mother of charity. So Lamin Boy is the third charity driver for Gold for the Gambia.
He's got his advert in already.
So we're heading pretty much through the country today. We've got a long way to go, a couple of hours drive, and we'll be going to Somita, which is where the Gold for the Gambia have built their schools. That's the journey ahead of us. It's a bright, sunny day. Early morning, low 70s already at the moment.
We're just pulling into a gas station by the look of it. And I think he's about to fill up with gas.
That's encouraging.
And it was encouraging. But as Lamin Boy filled up the tank, Neil mentioned that the Jeep engine was still running. No health and safety here then.
We were to pick up Sandy Sangyang, the English woman who is the driving force behind the project, on the way. We again hit the road. In the light of the early morning, you could see all of life from the Jeep. Women with baskets on their heads, brightly dressed, some Western influence, but many in traditional dress. Small shops, market stalls with amazing fruit and veg, packed minibuses with roof racks stacked high, taxis, hundreds of old Mercedes, all painted yellow and green.
You could see now that the cars joining the road from the side were actually leaving dusty side roads. There are few tarmacked roads in the Gambia. Dust flew up everywhere. It gets in your clothing and in your throat. Joanna had already given us the heads up on where we would be going.
I think the school you'll be visiting is, there's the school that started it all off for Martin and I, where we've done a lot of work, but we actually also built our own nursery school.
You built your own nursery school out there? Tell me about that.
So where Sandy's husband's from in Somita, it's quite a rural area, I suppose, that it's not got a lot of money. It is a lot sort of poorer than the main places that you do see out there. And we were gifted some land and we decided to build a nursery school.
We continued our journey, stopping at Sandy's home. Sandy met us at the gate and welcomed us in. It was an oasis of calm following the hectic journey. Sandy's husband, Sarjo, showed us around the garden where he'd planted lots of different fruit and veg, which he was carefully tending. The dry, sandy soil is great for growing some plants, but not all.
We continued our journey to Somita and asked Sandy how she'd come to be in the Gambia.
It started off with just a holiday in the Gambia in 2006, where I met a young man who took me to a school at my request that wasn't visited by tourists, and saw the need there and came back and did some fundraising to build a toilet. And that was my very first project, was a toilet in...
This is sounding really familiar. The second person who's got involved with a toilet.
Absolutely. Toilets, I mean, for me, it's a basic human need.
Yeah.
And to see the children just going off and just peeing or doing it, anything else.
Anywhere,
just wasn't dignified for me, and I felt it was the least that we could do. Came back 6 months later to oversee the building of the toilet with the money. And to be quite honest, I don't really know what happened after that, but it kind of sucked me in, and I was back again 6 months later talking about maybe registering a charity, which was the idea of my work colleagues, because at the time all I was doing was trying to get them to give me their money rather than doing any fundraising outside. And I was really lucky because I worked for Richmond Social Services, and they liked what I was doing, so they gave me a sabbatical in which to set up the charity. At the end of 2 years of doing that,
we're watching in front of us a bunch of, what are they, 12, 13 year olds?
I would think, maybe a little bit older, but yes.
And they're carrying
a desk,
school,
a chair.
A chair and desk.
It needs repairing by the looks of it.
It does need a bit of repairing. Half of the desk has disappeared.
Who got the best desk?
I can see. Yeah. So, yeah, everybody's got something to say, as you can hear. They're all talking at the same time. So I was able to take my sabbatical over the year and attach it to holidays, and they very kindly gave me 2 years to do that. And at the end of the 2 years, I felt I needed to leave because I needed to...
You still wanted to stay here.
I still wanted to stay here. I had plans of things I wanted to do. So I left my job with the intention of moving out here for 6 months and then going back and doing some local work and coming back and perhaps spending 6 months of the year here and 6 months there. But that was 10 years ago, and I've never actually gone back to work in the UK. I've kind of stayed out here. I only go back for short visits to visit my family.
Sandy explained that her husband's family were from Samita and that her father-in-law had given the land for the purpose of building a nursery school. Along the road, we encountered continual police roadblocks. Lamin Boy told us they were looking for drugs coming in from Senegal. They took little interest in us other than one officer who asked us if we had a pen that he could borrow.
When we arrived at the nursery, swarms of small children surrounded the jeep, all of them wanting to shake our hands and say hello. Team leader Yaya Fofana welcomed us to the school and explained about the huge Bantangba tree which dominated the playground. It had a massive trunk and was hundreds of years old. The tree produces balls of silk cotton that blow in the breeze and stick to the fences. Locals use the cotton to stuff pillows, apparently.
Welcome to Bantangba Nursing Schools in Somita, and this is our own schools, and we named the school after this big tree. And this tree, in our local language, we call it a bantang. In English, you say steel cotton tree. So we named the school after this big tree. And this tree is more than about 100 years ago. It's an old tree. According to the history, this tree, that's where they do circumcise their males and the females during those days. And if they circumcise males, they normally bring them into this tree and capture and train them how to respect the elders, and it takes them for a period of 1 month before they take you back home. And there's a secret there: when they circumcise males, females are not allowed to be here, because the simple reason there is we don't want female to know our secret, and female didn't want us to know our secret as well. So those are the secret there. So after when they circumcise female also, they bring them here and they capture for a matter of 2 weeks, the same as a male, but a male is not allowed to be here at all. So after 2 weeks, the villagers will be stand about 50 meters away from this big tree, where they are going to make a very big festival and welcome the guy to the village, where the drumming will be happening, and they have some form of party. You invite your neighbors, your friends for the celebration. Under that, that's the use of this tree until when the charity came and tried to establish their own schools. And this land is owned by my boss, Sandy's husband, father. It's their land, and their father is original from this village, moved and settled in Serekunda, but is born in this village. So this is their land. So when we are about to build our own schools, the charity is sponsoring about 500 students in the Gambia here. Right. Then we decided to build our own schools. And when we came here, we were thinking of about to buy a land, because it's not a free of charge. On top that, my friend, my boss, and also discover with this family, husband family, they came in term and they finally give this land to the charity a free of charge, where to build a school. Because who knows, a child graduate from these schools can be anything in this world. Yeah. So they also contribute towards that into development of the country. Like I always say, don't sit and expect what my country can do for me, but you also have to show your contribution to the country. Sure. That is going to be development of the country. So once again, welcomes.
By this time, a teacher had maneuvered the children into order and gave us a welcome song, and then each child took a turn at stepping forward and dancing. Enthusiastic four-year-olds full of uninhibited joy.
Yeah, that is the end of the entertaining from the students. Yeah.
The headmaster, Mr. Bala Musa Jammeh, took us into his office where we heard about the effect the nursery school was having on the village. Sandy explained the importance of small class sizes.
We keep the numbers low because we're determined that our class sizes will not go above 30. It's very important to me. And with all the schools that we actually support, this is the only school that I can actually insist that that happens, because this is our school, we run it. But the dividends pay, because the children get a really good education here. All our teachers are trained or on training. And when they pass through us and go on to the primary school in the village, they're welcomed by the head teacher and the teachers there, because they've got such a good start. And very often they'll go into level one. But at the end of the Christmas term, they've been promoted because they're so much more advanced than the other children. So, you know, I really think that's proof that what we're doing is worth working.
So what do they get in terms of numeracy and literacy? What would you expect from a child that leaves here to be able to do?
Well, I mean, you'll see as you go around what they're all actually doing. They've got a curriculum to follow.
Right.
You know, in the very young classes, they're just singing and playing and just getting, you know, the basics of English. By the time you get to the last two classrooms, which are on this side of the building, it's a bit more serious. They're doing writing and they're doing a lot more all in English, because although everything's taught in English, for the younger ones it has to be translated, obviously, otherwise they haven't got a clue what you're talking about. So I think you'll see, because when we go around the school, we'll start with the youngest, and then hopefully you'll be able to see how they develop when they get to the end.
How do you choose who comes here? If there are more children than there are spaces, that must be quite a difficult decision.
It's kind of first come, first served.
Okay.
It's the only fair way to do it. The only other criteria we have, and that we've had since the very beginning, is that a child hasn't had another place in another school, because we want to give children opportunities that wouldn't otherwise have had them.
Mm-hmm.
So when we first opened, we could have emptied the other nursery school that's on the other side of the village, because everybody wanted to come here, and we said no, it's only children that have never had an opportunity, because that's why we built it. Children on this side of the village just weren't getting the spaces over there, and that's still our case, is that you can't transfer from one nursery to this nursery, because that's not fair, you've already got a place. So. But other than that, you're first come, first serve. But it doesn't take long. Once we've opened registration, Bella and Yanks are in control of that. And then, you know, you get lots of parents begging you still to take their children. But we have to stick to our rules. Originally, I said 25, knowing that I'd get pushed. But 30 really is our maximum. You know, the classrooms are designed for 30 children. They've got enough space for 30 children. Have seats for 30 children. Otherwise, you know, like in many schools, you'll find two or three of them all sitting on one seat, you know, jostling for space. So we stick with that.
Yeah.
So
they seem very well behaved.
Oh yes,
they are. Yes. And children here generally are. There's a lot of respect for elders. So whether you're their parent or you're their teacher, if you tell them to do something, they generally will do it. You don't get kind of the back chat, or, you know, who do you think you are, and you're not my mother, or whatever. If you're out and you see a child misbehaving or in danger or something, you can go and sort it out and tell them off, shout at them, and the parent won't be around your house knocking on the door saying, you know, how dare you speak to my child like that. It's just how it is. This is a community. Everybody's kids are everybody's kids, basically.
And then we were given a tour of the school, visiting each class in turn. We were met by a wonder of engaged children, keen to learn, enthusiastic and vocal, taught by equally engaging teachers, a cacophony of singing and chanting.
Sarangu. Don.
How many horns? Two horns. Good, let's count. How many legs does a cow have? Let's count.
How many legs?
Four legs. Good.
Cows are crossing swords and four legs.
So this part of my class.
Headmaster Mr. Jammeh explained as we went round the classes that some of the teachers and many of the children are sponsored by Goal for the Gambia.
Two bananas, can we count it, huh?
One, two.
Good, only two bananas left, huh? Good. Now, how many oranges are here?
Two
oranges. Yeah? Okay, now we take out one. How many left?
One orange.
Huh?
One orange.
This is back to basics teaching, though. No technology. Well, there's no electricity.
Letter Y, very good. Who can write letter D for me? Letter D.
So she's my deputy, and I worked with her for more than 10 years. These children are children of 5 years old.
A big clap. Another one. Letter D.
One of the rooms had been turned into a dream room filled with toys. As we'd already heard, the children don't have toys at home.
The high-energy, joyous methods of teaching were infectious, and the classes all sang songs thanking us for visiting.
You are welcome.
You are welcome.
To our school.
To our school.
God bless you and bless me too.
God bless you and bless me too.
Stay with us.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. We focused mainly in these two classrooms both on language and writing skills as well, because we make sure that before they move from here to the primary school, almost all of them are able to write clearly. And almost all of them will be able to speak simple language.
Just at the end of our tour, Neil was taken by surprise, thumped on the back of the head with a football.
It was a good shot.
I'm presuming he was aiming for you.
Well, you might as well do, didn't you? I'm not being funny, but that kick for a barefooted boy. Seriously, that is a good footballer.
That's our latest toy. We've just installed a
That's very popular,
ago.
Isn't yes. it? A roundabout.
Yeah. Yeah, we have one at the other school that we support, and I just loved it so much, and the kids there loved it. So I was like, right, need one for Bantamba as well.
We spotted a large number of women sitting under the Bantamba tree.
Is that the mum sitting over there waiting?
No, they've come because you're here, because they say they can give us nothing. All they can do is come and say thank you and show that they're supporting the school.
A table and chairs were set up facing the tree, and we were invited to sit behind it. On the table were crocheted blankets which had been sent over by a supporter and some school equipment packs that we had taken with us.
Once again, welcome to Bantamba.
and welcome to Somita and welcome to our school, your school.
A woman started drumming using an old white plastic container, and one at a time women danced, often self-consciously. Linda was pulled up to dance.
And then it was Neil's turn. Everyone was amused by our attempts.
Never before seen.
But embarrassment aside, it was great fun. Even the headmaster had to take a turn, although he did look like he was facing his worst nightmare.
Then the speeches started. The headmaster spoke in the local dialect, and team leader of Goal for the Gambia, Yaya Fofana, translated what he had said into English.
And once again, big thank you to you for the item you bring. Maybe unto your eyes, you may think this a small thing, but to us, a very big thing. Because a one pencil can make somebody to be a president. A one pencil can make somebody to be a pilot. A one pencil can make somebody to be anything in this world. So on that note, we say very big, very big thank you to the materials you bring, and they mean a lot to us, and we appreciate it so much. And for them, they don't have much to say, because they are very much happy. Somebody who is giving quality education to a student. Only thing they can say, big thank you. And if they have something to say more than that, and they will. So once again, big thank you to you.
Then one of the mothers spoke on their behalf, saying that they were happy we'd visited.
It's like whenever your item arrives, neither you are at UK or you came along with it, and they understand that it's something which they're supposed to do. It's for their own duty to do it, but they cannot afford it. So somebody from somewhere else was trying to help. Anyway, for them, sometimes they always think they don't know what to do, at least to please you. But this is what they can do to come and entertain and show their appreciations. Wish you all what you wish for yourself, and let may God make your dreams success in life. And hope to see you next year with your family, friends, the same dancing.
No! Would you translate?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we've never been to the Gambia before. This is our first time. Thank you for making us so welcome. You have wonderful children. If this is the future of the Gambia, the country will go far. It will be a great country. We will take that story back, and we will try and spread a lot more of the story of what's happening here back to the people back in Cambridge. So we hope that we can do a lot more to help. And thank you again for making us so welcome.
One woman even jokingly offered me her baby as a gift.
That's a present for you.
All right.
So I think you need to put it in the suitcase.
Yeah, yeah.
But be very much careful at the airport.
Yes.
When the formalities were over, some of the women came over and those who could talk English spoke to us.
My friend, how is your name?
My name is Linda.
Linda, my name is Toma.
Toma.
Jeju.
Jeju.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, thank you to see you.
Thank you very much for coming.
We were then driven the short distance to the Yankuba Kamara compound, where we were to be given lunch.
Yankuba is the chairman of the school, bursar and project manager for all Samita projects and sponsored children. He showed us around the compound, which was made up of four single-storey buildings, two with verandas with balustrades surrounding an open square. This is home to an extended family of around 70 people. Yaya explained that there were four houses because a man could marry up to four wives.
As a system in Gambia here, in those days, our parents, they married up to four wives.
Right.
Yeah. And if you are part of that family, what the father will do, he'll build a house separate. One, two, three, four. So
okay.
The wife will be separate.
Wife. Yeah. Oh, okay.
The wife will be separate. So you spend two nights here, spend two nights here, spend two nights here, spend two nights. That you can have a lot of child and they are not from the same mother and father. So and the same way, that's how they live. They live separately. Those who are from the same mother and father, they will live this side. Those who are from the same mother and father, they will live this side. But at the end of the day, when they all cook, they all meet at the middle and eat.
Yeah. Is that still the case then? Are men still marrying several women?
Still, it's in the program because it's in the Islamic, what we believe. Islam say that if you marry one wife and you are not satisfied with that wife, or that woman cannot satisfy you, maybe your demanding is more than the wife.
Mm-hmm.
So you may go and look for another wife, simple reason, so that you cannot make fornication.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if you have two and still you are not satisfied, go and look for another one. And that third, if that one cannot satisfy, make it four.
My
so that is
goodness.
End of it.
So you need to that before it stops. So we believe so all those four will be satisfied.
We were shown the kitchen, the food being prepared, and an old derelict mud block kitchen, which they explained had been destroyed during the rainy season.
You see, this is how we cook.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Wow.
We put big stones and put cooking pot on it and put firewood on it, and boil it, you see? So those holes, that's where the smoke go in, out. And this is built by a moat house. So if you see anywhere this type of way, you can remember that people are poor because they cannot afford to buy smoke.
Yeah.
So most of the houses here are moat.
It works though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it works. The only thing you have problem is during the rain season.
Oh, really? Does it start to...
Yeah, it... It Trumble. Make many people to lose their house.
Oh, really?
So that's why they put this cover on top of it. If you build a moat, you can try to find a cement to cover because if not, when the rain came,
keep
you lose
home.
Your house. Yeah, because the water, when the more the water is cooking, the more it eats the blocks. It gets wet.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so when it gets wet, you'll be sitting one day, you had it, vroom, so the everything go down.
We also met the elder of the family.
In Gambia, the elder son of the family always step in the foot of the elder, the father in the family.
Right.
If the father die or the father travel, the elder of the family will take the responsibility of the father.
Yeah.
So which means
he's over.
Yeah. It means he's overseeing.
He's in charge.
Yeah.
Right.
He's in charge. Yeah. Even when you come in terms of marriage, if you want to marry, I have to come to him and tell him, bro, look, you know, I see a wife somewhere. I want to marry.
Yeah.
So he would also go and talk to the genius and the elders, and they gather together without my knowledge and go there, send the colonel. Whatever they discuss, they will come and explain to him, and he will call me as a genius and tell me this is the step we are going.
Ataya tea was being brewed, a drink you're offered everywhere in the Gambia. It's a very strong green tea with lots of sugar that's brewed three times. Strong taste of tannin in the first cup, second and third were better.
It's green tea, so in theory it should be really nice and healthy, but they put so much sugar in it.
Perfect. Works for me.
I like it. Not some people don't, but it's worth a try. It's very traditional. You see it everywhere in Gambia. I think it's like the equivalent of a British pub. If somebody's brewing this, Lamin will do it quite fast today, but it can take several hours.
Just to
they brew it three times, and you know it just draws people, so they all sit together.
It's an excuse to get people together.
Yeah,
kettle's on.
One of the major things is school is sponsorship for the children that go to school.
Oh, how would people do that then?
The way we work it is it's a monthly donation, so it all goes through our site. It all goes through. The gift aid as well, so it's £5 a month ongoing.
£5 a month will sponsor a child out there.
Yeah.
And that's nothing, is it?
Not at all. And that includes their school fees. It goes towards a uniform, a book bag, and everything that goes with that for that year. So £60 a year.
Do you sponsor a particular child? Do you know who this child is? Or is it a generic kind of £5 and we know that sponsors a child?
I think you do know them because you receive a school report and you're told about them. We have caseworkers that work for us. So what they do is they visit all of the children when it comes to school report time, and they visit them sporadically through the year as well. So you'll get something personalised from your child.
Sandy explained that her husband had been sponsored when he was at school.
Absolutely loved it. He said that because I was always worried that kids would be made to feel a bit ashamed.
But maybe here they'd feel special.
But they feel really special here.
Oh,
yeah. So he had Dutch sponsors, and they used to come over once a year. But they visit him at the school with the embarrassment of being dragged out in front of the whole school to sort of shake these strangers' hands and everything. But he can still tell you their names, and they're probably long ones. He said they were very old, but then again,
yeah, when you're a child,
everybody's old.
Everyone's old.
We must list as dinosaurs.
Something you should be aware of in the Gambia is how young everyone looks.
And some of the boys that teach in the school, they look really, really young. They just look like young teenagers, really.
Yes, I mean, I think the two in the first two classes, they're our student teachers at the moment, so they're probably around 20. But they could be a bit older.
Just how old I am?
39.
What?
Yeah.
You're not.
Really?
No chance.
Honestly?
No chance. It's crazy.
Yeah,
you're nearly 40.
My goodness.
I mean, honestly, you look about 22, 24.
That's Gambia. You see, so if you see my elder brother is somewhere around 40-somethings, he look young like me.
Lunch was served under a mango tree, which they explained was the air conditioning of Africa. Two large plates of food were brought out, one vegetarian and one with meat. The spicy curry base to the food was really delicious.
After lunch, we sat and chatted and took in our surroundings. A group of children played together, racing each other round the compound. Animals strolled around, goats and cows, dogs and chickens.
We asked Sandy about her work.
Does the government here recognise the work that you're doing? I mean, do they know who you are? Do they know about what you're doing?
No, because I've always kept under the radar because...
And that's deliberate?
Deliberate, yeah. I mean, so many times I've been asked to have openings of schools filmed from local national television and to be interviewed and everything, and I'm just like, for what? What good is it going to do? You know, if it's the UK, then you hope you get more.
Yes, absolutely. That would be different.
But here, all it is for me, it's just saying, look what I've done, you know. And I don't need that. So I've always avoided it.
The toilet was off to one side and consisted of a long slot in the ground with a deep pit underneath. It was surrounded by corrugated iron sheets and had a kettle of water for you to wash yourself when finished.
A young man wearing ripped jeans and a trendy T-shirt wandered through the compound on his way home. He wouldn't have been out of place in the UK and looked incongruous somehow in that location. Sandy told us he sells jewellery.
It was time to leave.
Again, the road back was filled with sights you just wouldn't see in the UK. Like the man on a motorbike with a goat and a basket on the back. I'm still wondering what became of that goat.
Next, we head off to the Bantaba project and meet with Rose and her team. It's day two of our trip to the Gambia, and we're now going to look at the Bantaba project.
The Bantaba project is being supported by two of our local Rotary clubs, Cambridge and Sawston. It's the brainchild of Rose Dawson, who's lived in the Gambia for decades.
John Martin is this year's president at the Rotary Club of Cambridge and is passionate about helping the project, so much so that he goes out to the Gambia a couple of times a year to give hands-on help. John's a retired master builder and so has the skill set to get stuck into the nitty-gritty of the ongoing building work.
Irene Childerley is Rose's sister and she's a member of the Sawston Rotary Club, which also supports the project. So what is the Bantaba project? We paid a visit alongside Saini, the owner of the Swiss Boutique Hotel, who's a member of the Rotary in the Gambia.
The journey to the site wasn't far from the hotel and we were taken by minibus, but because it was down a dirt track full of potholes, it was quite gruelling.
We arrived to the sound of drumming and warm welcomes from Rose, who's the powerhouse behind the project, and Abu, who has been friends with Rose for many years and lives in part of Rose's house with his family.
They've been through a lot together, at one point running a beach bar which was demolished by the then government. Abu was standing on the roof as the bulldozers approached, trying to stop the demolition. He leapt down only at the last minute.
Abu is a skilled craftsman who carves figures using a sharp implement and a mallet, gripping the wood between his bare feet. It looked treacherous, every blow a moment away from agonising injury.
But this is how he earned his income since before he was 20 anyway. But he'll tell you his own story.
He's still got his toes there, so must be good.
Abu specializes really in making masks. he loves to do these masks. And each mask has got a different story to it, because there's the days of the week. There's a mask for Monday, a mask for Tuesday. So you can buy the whole set the week in different masks.
Who taught you how to do this, Abu?
Coming to my father. My father is a carver, but not like this. The carve,
You know what they used to pound things, you know, like this big one. Those are simple ones. This is now more complex, you know, because it's like finesse.
It's more creative.
Yeah.
It was amazing watching the lump of wood slowly take shape. Abu's craftsmanship showed years of practice as he nimbly chipped away at the teak wood. I had to buy one, and so did Saini for the hotel.
So I want you to finish that big one for me and give it to me.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Finish it nicely.
All right.
Yeah?
Thank you.
I'd like to hang that in my hotel.
Here, Abu. Huh? Making money already.
Taking all. Are you going to train people in the community to learn how to do this?
Inshallah, when we finish.
Rose showed Linda around the house,
while John took Neil around the building site. Rose explained she wanted to do holistic therapy and train local women.
This is what I do. I just set it all out for you to have an understanding of what I'm teaching and training. And of course, I'll do massage, reflexology and holistic therapies from here. Hopefully people will come out this far to have maybe a free treatment or a very cheap treatment, and allow, I presume, girls to practice on people's feet or backs. Or, do you know what I mean? And that might also bring people out here. So there, I've put the curtains up, and then I just made here my living space. And then I plug in my iPad. And this is
you got your slippers there. That's home from home, this, isn't
it? So there's my bed. If I have any friend or anything, I have plenty of these. I can easily set up, because here I built them like this.
Yeah.
So that I can take all of this out of here, and I've got a huge classroom.
So what we've got along here is the accommodation block with the showers for anybody that stays and comes down and helps Rose out. The first one is a kitchen. Then we move on to a store. And then we go on to the bedroom.
But it's a mother and baby.
Mother and baby one. And then we've got shower blocks. Two showers are going in on this other side.
This other side is identical to this, only Abu, his wife and his family stay there.
Yeah.
Because they need to take care of all of this. You know what I mean? When I'm not here.
Well, they look after it. And you can't leave it on its own. What would happen if you...
If I left it and just looked? No. Nothing would be here.
Really?
Nothing would be here. You couldn't even lock it up. You still need a caretaker.
District nurses, we know them, will come in, and the mother of babies will be here, and she'll be able to administrate whichever vaccines or anything they need, or look after any baby's injuries or whatever they need to do. They'll be able to do it in this room. So it's a multi-purpose room, but primarily we're hoping that the nurse will come at least, you know, maybe once a month, one every 6 weeks, and the girls in the bush with their babies will come in and be looked after a lot better than they're doing at the moment.
So there's my bathroom.
It's
all our power.
And you've got a shower as well?
Well, no shower, just bucket and thingy.
And, oh, okay, so you just chuck it over yourself. And
there's a washing basin, and the water pipe is there for a washing basin to go in there. And then the shower pipes and everything will go in when we get the mains water to come in, or a pump or something. At the moment, Mariama picks it from the well down there and carries it here.
Goodness
and then
me.
You fill a cistern and pull the flush, or you're just lifting and just
how does she lift these heavy buckets of water? That's incredible.
So
they're
here,
big buckets.
To the left of us as we go down here will be the workshops where Rose is hoping that we will be able to get people in, like Abu, who's the carver, who will come in there and teach the youngsters how to make a living, basically. So we'll use that for them. There'll also be an IT room, so they're getting more literate with computer sciences. And also there'll be a hobbies room, which will be the sewing room, where they'll have sewing machines and be able to make their clothing. Then they'll be able to go off and start to sell their clothes down on the markets that we've just passed, have you seen? And there's going to be one area where we're hoping we'll be able to get welders in, so we can teach the boys to do welding. As we drove by, we could see that the blacksmiths were working, and we're hoping then that we'll have one here every so often, so that they can teach youngsters how to weld properly and safely. As you know, health and safety is not a big issue out here. You know, people don't bother much about it.
Do you envisage one day there'll be dare I say, coach loads of
tourists. Well, it's not coach loads, but mini bus loads, maybe, six at a time. Uh-huh. Maybe have a cup of tea, maybe have their lunch.
John showed me some remarkable handmade pillars, which were spectacular.
If we'd done that at home, it would cost us an absolute fortune. But these are genuinely handmade columns.
Beautiful, and
they are beautiful. And this guy that we've got here, he's so talented. Lamin, his name is, and he is so talented.
How helpful is it having the likes of John coming out and giving his expertise?
The best ever. That's what I need, teachers. I need teachers to come out here, either stay with us, or we'll find them cheap accommodation, or they can just stay here and just muck in with fish and rice or something.
You're looking for people then to come out?
Teachers.
The people that have got
anybody.
Expertise.
Expertise, definitely. Yeah. But we need anybody to come out and help
anybody
us.
Come and
you don't need to be a teacher. You don't need to be a qualified teacher. In building, yes, we want the experts. The plumbing, we'd like the experts.
So you'll need what? Joiners, plumbers, electricians.
The lot.
Mm-hmm.
Students from the university and give them an opportunity to show off their skills to their college in the UK, and then here
and doing something as well
worthwhile to help a community.
Everything in here has been built by kids or young men under the age of 23. Every item, every piece of concrete, every block that's laid is all done by the boys on site. And it's part of their training. I come out twice a year, and it's part of their training that they are shown how to lay them properly. They're shown how to build cupboards. You'll see later we built some big cupboards inside the house. I built one with them first. When I first arrived out here in the Gambia, they had never seen a spirit level, and they'd never known what a screw was. They looked at it as much as say, well, what do I do with this? And when we said, well, it's to fix in wood, the first thing they picked up with the largest sort of hammer they could find
and use it
as a nail. And of course, as we know, screws are a lot stronger. And so when we're doing door frames, windows, etc., everything has to be screwed. And a countersink, well, that was just off this planet. We didn't know what to do with that. We just looked at it. But when we put it in a drill and showed them that actually that will lose the head of the screw for you, and it will be smooth, and you won't keep ripping your hands open on the rough screw edge, they realised that, oh yeah, right, so we use a countersink, we drill first, we pre-drill, then we screw it in, and then we countersink it so that the screw has disappeared. I showed the boys that once, and then I said, right, we're going to build this cupboard. So we built the cupboard, and I said, right, it's down for you now to build it. You've seen how it's done. They're very quick learners. I said, you've seen how it's done, that's what you got to do. I'll be back tomorrow. I said, if it's not right, you're going to take it all down and do it again. And I came, and it wasn't square and it wasn't upright. They'd done a fabulous job considering they'd never done it before. But I think because we said to them, it's not right, you've got to take it down, they realised that, well, we need to get this right first time, otherwise the old man's going to come back and he's going to make us take it down again.
Yeah.
And so the second day I came, it was as good as what we'd done all together. And they've done it ever since. And they haven't forgotten.
Here, Jay and the boys, Jay came out with Irene last year and built this
wardrobe?
Well, it's like a wardrobe, only it's for storage for me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's somewhere to put my clothes. And I didn't want doors on it because here I can wash, clean out mosquitoes if there is any. We don't have any, but thank God.
You have to believe in them, that's the thing. You, and it's no good showing them there and do it and then do it and walk away because they've learned nothing. You say, look, that's how I've done it. Now you do it. And it doesn't really matter if it takes twice or three times as long.
They've got plenty of time.
They've got nothing to do. And you know, they're always here. Every time I come, as you saw today, first thing they do is to come up and give me a big hug to say, welcome back, Jay. What torture are you going to put us through today? But we get on very well together, all of us. It's a fantastic job. And I thought when I come out of the Gambia, this is going to be a dreadful experience, John. You're not going to like this. And I came out and I absolutely loved it from day one. And it's a privilege to come out and work with these kids. It's an absolute privilege. And we'd love anybody that was a trade to come out here and spend a couple of weeks during their vacation, or better still, the young guys at Tech College, for instance, who are going through construction, and they want a bit of experience of what it's really like, basic building, to come out here and just give a fortnight of their time.
Any particular skills you're looking for?
Well, I think, as you can see, we're going to need bricklayers. A carpenter is not too bad. That's what I was, so we do carpentry all right. But a carpenter can come out and do the doors and that sort of thing, just to give them an experience. Welders, if we come to the stage when we need a welder and we could put a request out and they come out, even for a week. You know, you can do a lot of welding in a week. And they don't want elaborate stuff, really. They don't want decorative stuff. We just want things that are going to work for the community in the bush.
But there's not even a widespread use of generators for
it. No, there isn't.
Is fuel expensive here?
For these people, fuel is just a non-event. You just can't afford it. As we said when we were driving down, the ladies who tend the gardens, because there's always the ladies here who tend to do the really hard work, which is really a surprise to me, you know. But they do, the ladies do the hard work, and they walk for miles a day with water to make sure the plants are watered. Then they'll do them again in the evening when it goes a bit cooler. And they said that they have a little tray in their market, each lady, and it's about 4 foot square. And I said to one of them one day, what happens if you don't sell this today, you know, your tomatoes and your fruit? And she said, we don't eat. The children eat, but we don't. We go without a meal. And we rely on our friends then to come around and give us a bowl of rice, some rice and some veggies. But they are a nation that look after each other. They really are. If anybody's short, the rest of the tribe, because they're still tribal, they've still got the head of the tribe that lives out here. And you have to get permission off of him for everything. If you want to buy a plot of land, you go to the head of the tribe. If he says, yes, you can have an acre, then he'll tell you where you can have it. And then you pay a small amount to the tribe leader, and he'll give you a piece of his land. Because everything you see around here is owned by the head of the tribe. It's his land. He's been given it years ago, but they are selling it off now, which is, in their terms, making the head of the tribe one of the wealthy people within the tribe. Not nowhere near like our wealth is, but to him, you know, if they got £100, my God, if he got £100, he's a multi-millionaire in our lives. But it's just the fact that there are, you know, the youngsters. I love the younger generation. They've got so much to offer. And I think sometimes, you know, they get bad reports, and it's only the very few that create a problem. The rest of them are absolutely delightful, and I love working with them. And I like, you know, they say, oh, I want you as my dad, and I said, I can't afford to be your dad.
Like any project of this nature, work can only be carried out as funds allow, and as the workers gain the necessary skills. That's why they're so keen to get people with trades going out there and giving up their spare time to help build the workshops and train the local youngsters at the same time. We'll keep a close eye on the Bantaba project and we'll revisit them when it's up and running.
Back at the hotel, there was a gathering of Rotarians from the northwest of England who were also involved in projects across the Gambia. Over dinner, we exchanged thoughts and stories.
One thread that ran through all of our conversation was that we all saw the Gambia as a nation in need of a hand up rather than a hand out. This is a very poor country and the people on the whole seem to be happy with their lot, but will jump at the chance to make a better life for themselves and their families.
We were made to feel very welcome in the Gambia, and it's easy to see why people go there for holidays and why so many feel the need to get more closely involved and help with the various projects.
You can sponsor a child to go to school in the Gambia through the Bantaba project for £5 a month, or offer to give practical help to the Bantaba project.
Both the Bantaba project and the Bantaba project have active websites and Facebook pages. You'll find the links to those on the Cambridge 105 Radio website.